I hope you're having a good day. This is Pat, and I'm reading from the Clinton Journal for Friday, September the 19th. And this is a message from the editor. This one's on us, Clinton. If you're new to the Clinton Journal, hello. If you've been with us for years, welcome back. And if this copy showed up in your mailbox as a surprise, well, that's the idea. This week we're doing what the newspaper business calls a total saturation edition, a free sample delivered to every home with a Clinton zip code so you could see what a truly local paper looks like and feels like in your hands. Why now? Because it is fall, when Clinton really turns into itself. The school calendar is packed, the fields are turning, Friday nights matter, and the neighbors swap weekend plans in the grocery aisle. That's the rhythm a community paper should match. Our promise is simple. We will put names in print, spell them right, and give you the front row seat to the life of this town. Here's what you'll find in the typical journal. Local sports that lead, game stories and photos you can clip, schools and community, homecoming courts, concerts, honor rolls, fundraisers, city, county, and public safety, with meetings, budgets, and decisions that touch your street. Life events, such as engagements, anniversaries, obituaries, lives lived here. What's next? A calendar you don't have to scroll past ads to see. Local advertising that works. You see who supports your teams and events, so you can support them. Print matters because it lasts. A newspaper slows us down to notice one another. The school board note you might skim past online. The church supper you circle with a pen. The honor flight photo you tuck into a keepsake box. Screens are great for passing things by. Ink is for keeping. We print first and online too. You'll see quick updates and photo galleries on our website. Then find the full curated story gathered in the weekly edition that lands in your mailbox and kitchen table. New owner special. Give us a try. To make it easy to come aboard, we're running a new owner subscription special this month. Less than $1 a week. Take advantage of the discounted price. Support local coverage and help us keep showing up. We can't do it without you. This sampling issue is also a thank you to the advertisers who make it possible. They buy space here because they believe in Clinton and in you. If you appreciated opening your mailbox to a local paper this week, let them know with your business. A local newspaper is a weekly promise. Ours is to show up with care, to verify, to count the yards and the votes, to get the names and numbers right, and to celebrate the everyday wins and make this place home. We will earn your trust by what's on the page. No spin, no clickbait, just Clinton. So yes, this one's on us. If it feels like something your home should keep, we'd love to earn a spot in your kitchen table. See you next week. Billy McMacken is owner of the Clinton Journal. The Vault gets $40,600 in a Taco Bell grant. The Vault is part of the record $28 million in community grants being awarded in 2025 by the Taco Bell Foundation. The Vault announced this week it was selected as a recipient of the 2025 community grant from the Taco Bell Foundation. The funding will support the experiential learning and leadership initiatives designed to prepare students for future employment, community leadership, and service. Some of these opportunities include Envision U summer career camps, Golden Gears small business leadership program, After Hours Program, and Student Ambassador Team. This grant allows us to invest in the students of DeWitt County and the surrounding areas, providing impactful programming that empowers them to positively influence the community of tomorrow, said Wendy Dement, Executive Director. We are grateful to the Taco Bell Foundation and the Luke Work Enterprises Incorporated for believing in our mission and investing in the potential of our youth. The Taco Bell Foundation awarded a record-breaking $28 million in community grants this year to nearly 500 nonprofit organizations nationwide. The Vault was nominated for the grant by local Taco Bell franchise Luke Work Enterprises Incorporated. We believe that empowering young people is one of the most meaningful ways we can invest in the future, said Lisa Lane Carden, Executive Director of the Taco Bell Foundation. This record investment is a testament to the power of a community-driven change and the limitless potential that exists when we remove barriers and open doors. Through this grant, the Vault will offer area students hands-on learning experiences that build knowledge and skills across a variety of career fields, preparing them for future employment. In addition, the funding will create opportunities for students to develop and excel in community leadership and service. To learn more about the Vault, please visit www.thevaultclinton.org. To learn more about the Taco Bell Foundation and the Community Grants Program, please visit www.tacobellfoundation.org/who-we-support. Update on Soldiers' Plot Work. Also, Mayor Reed's Proclamation for Constitution Week by Gordon Woods of the Clinton Journal. As work continues to restore the Civil War soldiers' plot in Woodlawn Cemetery, Terry Lemmel of the DeWitt County Genealogical Society gave the City Council an update Tuesday on the project's current progress. Lemmel showed commissioners photos of work that had progressed so far, as well as some historical photos of the plot. Some old negatives of the plot were discovered by the Genealogical Society, and photographer Mark Woods produced photos from them for the group. We had some really old negatives, Lemmel said. Nobody even knows where they came from. One of the photos showed cannonballs piled near the old cannon. Lemmel said they were donated to the Iron Drive during World War I. The photo also shows a memorial stone erected in 1898. So Lemmel said they knew the photo was taken at some time during that period. World War I ran from 1914 through 1918 with U.S. combat involvement from 1917 to 1918. Lemmel also noted Woods pointed out the Illinois Traction System tracks, which ran north to south across what is now the museum grounds. They were visible in the background of the photo. But Lemmel said the important thing they learned from the photos was that some headstones were moved to locations that didn't match the names on the stones. This was useful information in their restoration work. During the work, Lemmel said some of the stones were discovered to be set into concrete below the ground, while others had been broken loose below the ground and reset using some unusual methods. Some stone mountings, such as a keyhole base in which a stone sat inside below the ground, was in good condition and reusable. Following protocol, the restoration volunteers ordered a replacement stone for one grave, and the damaged original will be buried with the base of the new stone. So we will dig that deep enough to put that either below or beside the replacement stone, Lemmel said. During the earlier moment in Tuesday's meeting, Mayor Helen Michalessy read a proclamation presented by Edith Brady Loney of the DeWitt Clinton DAR proclaiming September 17th through 23rd U.S. Constitution Week in Clinton. One of the leading projects of the DAR is educating the public about the history and importance of the U.S. Constitution. And now from the op-ed page, Sadness. This is On Point by Richard Koritz. This past week should have brought a profound sadness on all freedom-loving Americans who cherish the concept of open and free debates in our grand experiment of representative democracy. Charlie Kirk was on a college campus in Utah for a debate with students, which is a very normal activity for Kirk. This time, an individual who disagreed with Kirk's message chose not to debate him and instead elected to kill him with an assassin's bullet. This act was a quintessential attack on free speech and open debate. I concede I was not one who kept up on Charlie Kirk's activities and events. Kirk appealed to the young people in our society, and especially those in college. My days in college have long passed. I should have been paying more attention to his events. Charlie Kirk was 31 when he died. He was a husband and a father of two small children at his passing. He grew up in the Chicago suburbs and had a passion for politics and faith-related discussions. His parents actually supported his efforts. Charlie Kirk was a very smart student, but declined to attend college because he viewed it as a waste of his time. Kirk was a self-educated man. Stop for a moment and consider another self-educated Illinois man, Abraham Lincoln. Like Lincoln, Kirk read incessantly and was willing to debate anyone regarding his belief system, be it that political or theological. This non-college kid debated the best throughout the world. College campuses worldwide welcomed Kirk to their campuses to debate current events and philosophy. Kirk even debated at Oxford in England, which is no small achievement. The amazing thing about Kirk was that he was always polite and respectful of those who had opposing views. Kirk was extremely persuasive in his debate skills, and those students who truly wanted to learn attended his debates. The adage is so true that we learn more from those who we differ than with those of like mind. The problem in the U.S. is that we've over-politicized differences of opinion. Those individuals who attempted to assassinate Trump, shot Scalise, and bludgeoned Paul Pelosi all disagreed with them or their spouses' political positions. They have been indoctrinated with the belief system that their worldview is that of ultimate virtue, and those who oppose them must be eliminated. That belief system justifies murder as being for the greater good of mankind. That is the type of indoctrination that we have seen in North Korea, Stalin's Russia, Nazi Germany, and to a large extent China today. Kirk wanted the debate, and he knew that there were personal risks involved. He debated anyway. Truth will always win the debate if given a free and open debate. America is at a turning point. We can open up the nation to be honest and open to honest, open debate, or if we can curtail it and allow violence to determine the winner. I believe the nation wants that open debate and not the dogma that many are spouting. I am fortunate to have seats at the Memorial Stadium that have no one in front of me. This past Saturday, we took our 18-month-old great-granddaughter to her first college game. She wasn't really excited, that is, until halftime. The bands came out. They were loud and they were moving, flags and drum majors. Ellie then stood on Grandma's lap and enthusiastically directed the band and everything else on the field. I paid to watch a football game, but I would have paid double again to simply see that little girl have a fun time. Enjoy your children and grandchildren. They are what keeps us going. Richard Koritz is an Illinois native attorney and former DeWitt County State's Attorney. Senior Newsline by Matilda Charles. Know the signs of senior abuse. Sometimes it takes watchful eyes to keep seniors safe. Whether it's physical, emotional, or financial abuse, or any other kind, there are those who come in contact with seniors can look for signs that all is not well. In banking, if you spot a senior who seems distressed and who repeatedly takes large sums of money out of an account or changes his or her routine, that senior might be a victim of abuse or a scam. Seniors don't use the drive-up teller window. Go inside so staff can get to know you. Sign a new signature card every 6 months so your handwriting sample is current. If you spot personality changes in a senior, the cause might be physical or it might be a result of abuse. Ask what's going on. If a senior who used to dress immaculately is now wearing the same clothes for days in a row, ask. If a senior is no longer as sociable or doesn't participate in various activities, ask. If you spot bruises or injury, ask. In a caregiver or hospital situation, you might see lack of care or physical abuse. A neighbor who's had relatives move in might suddenly change his or her routines. At home, the senior might be denied food or medicine or mail. If you want more information to help seniors, go online to the National Center on Elder Abuse, NCEA@acl.gov, or call 855-500-3537. Learn about the signs of abuse and what you can do when you suspect it's taking place. Check eldercare.gov or call 800-677-1116. You'll find information on getting help for housing, in-home services, long-term care, nutrition, and abuse. Seniors, if you think you're being abused in any way, call the police. You don't have to put up with abusive treatment. Edgar's contributions to higher education, good government, lauded by the U of I system's leaders. Urbana, University of Illinois system leaders, reflected today on the passing of former Governor Jim Edgar, whose acclaimed commitment to good government led to the formation of an esteemed leadership program that bears his name. Established in 2012, the Edgar Fellows Program at the U of I Systems Institute of Government and Public Affairs seeks to inspire collaboration in addressing the state's major challenges. Selected on a highly competitive process that reflects the state's political, racial, ethnic, and geographic diversity, more than 500 Edgar Fellows have participated in the program, including elected and appointed officials from all levels of government, leaders of nonprofit and labor organizations, and public policy influences in the private sector. Governor Edgar was the ideal of collaborative and civil leadership, both as an elected leader and throughout his life. He led with vision and demonstrated a deep appreciation for higher education and its role in promoting social mobility and maintaining a stable society, U of I System President Tim Killeen said. His legacy here at the University of Illinois system lives on through the Edgar Fellows Program, training future generations of political leadership to address our state's needs. We are deeply saddened by the passing of Governor Jim Edgar, IGPA Director Benjamin Superfine said. As the founder and guiding force behind the Edgar Fellows Program, he led it through 13 highly successful conferences. Governor Edgar believed Illinois should be led by people of character. His vision for a stronger Illinois will carry on through this innovative program. University of Illinois System Board of Trustees Chairman Jesse Rees worked with Edgar on Governor J.B. Pritzker's transition team following Pritzker's 2018 election. I was privileged to experience a unique leader and public servant who truly put the interests of Illinoisans above all else, Ruiz said. Edgar also shared his perspective with students of U of I system classrooms. University Counsel Scott Rice served as an aide and advisor to the Edgar administration from 1994 to 1998 and remained in contact with Edgar and his wife, Brenda. Governor Edgar brought together kind people who simply believed in good government and public service with integrity, regardless of party affiliation or background, Rice said. He was a champion of higher education in Illinois, and that legacy will benefit our state for generations to come. Home Field Energy send customers letter. Editor's note. Home Field Energy, the current electric aggregation contractor for Clinton, sent out the following letter to its local customers over the past couple of weeks. The city of Clinton also posted the correspondence online. The city of Clinton's current municipal aggregation contract with Home Field Energy expires following the November 2025 meter read, effectively December 1st, 2025. Currently, the program's fixed rate is 0.11928 cents per kilowatt hour. Good Energy, working on behalf of the City of Clinton and several other local area communities, has secured a new 17-month contract with Homefield. The new contract has a total fixed energy supply rate of 0.11880 per kilowatt hour. This new rate will not change regardless of Ameren's rate changes and is a fixed rate from December 2025 through May 2027. The current Ameren residential electric supply rate is 0.1218 per kilowatt hour. Ameren will be adjusting from their summer rate to a non-summer rate, which will be released October 1, 2025. Although the Ameren non-summer rate may readjust to a lower rate based on market predictions, the rate is expected to increase again during the summer rate period in 2026. The expected increase will not affect those account holders in the aggregation program. It is important to note, account holders who decide to leave the program and return to Ameren must choose a new supplier within 60 days. If not, they must remain with Ameren for an additional 10 months, 1 year total, exposing them to potentially higher rates and volatile spikes in the market next summer. This is not a program rule. This is a utility rule known as utility hold. Residents that do nothing will remain with the city's municipal aggregation program. Residential and small business accounts inside the city of Clinton have an average participation rate of approximately 80 to 85% with the program. In September, residents will receive an opt-out letter notifying them of this new electric supply rate with Homefield and providing them notice of a 21-day opt-out period. Residents have the ability to opt out of the program online, by mail, or by phone during this opt-out period. It is important not to call the city to opt out of this program. They cannot opt accounts out of the program. Please keep in mind that account holders, even after the opt-out date listed on the letter, are still able to leave the program at any time without penalty. As directed by Illinois law, opt-outs are a requirement each time there is a rate change, supplier change, or a term change. The opt-out notices are a requirement and must be sent to each eligible account holder, even if they have previously opted out of the program. Account holders, on average, who have consistently stayed in the aggregation program since the inception of the program, had showed savings over the Ameren rate. Not to mention, the Ameren rate has changed nearly 30 times since 2013, while the aggregation rate has changed 8 times, bringing much-needed stability in this unstable energy market. Account holders wishing to opt out of the program can do so by opt out online at homefieldenergy.com/opt-out. Enter the opt-out code from the opt-out notice. returning the prepaid postage opt-out coupon attached to the opt-out notice from Homefield. You may call Homefield direct at 833-200-9834. We have one obituary today. Elmer Goad of Lane passed away at 1:39 p.m. on September the 13th, 2025 at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Grave site services were held at 10:30 a.m. on Thursday, September 18th at Friends Creek Cemetery, Argenta, with Pastor Jonathan Robertson officiating. Visitation was 9 to 10 a.m. on Thursday at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. Memorials may be directed on behalf of Elmer to the Weldon Springs Foundation or the donor's choice. Elmer was born on January 13, 1936, in Devonia, Tennessee, the son of Cass and Oma Doherty Goad. He married Twyla Jones, then later married Carol Dawson on September the 18th, 2002, in Clinton, Tennessee. Survivor include his wife, Carol Goad, Lane, a son, Ricky Lane Goad, Maroa, five grandchildren, Blake Goad, Corey Goad, Lindsay Goad, Chelsea, and Tiffany Pinedo, two great-grandchildren, Hunter Goad and Hayden Goad, stepson Raymond, and of Columbia, South Carolina, brother James Goad of Lake City, Tennessee. Elmer was preceded in death by his parents, former wife Twyla Goad, son Leslie Goad, three sisters and seven brothers. Elmer worked for many years at the Illinois State Highway Department in DeWitt County. He loved the outdoors, especially hunting and fishing. We want to thank the hospital staff at Carle Foundation Hospital for their wonderful care of Elmer in his time of need. Online condolences may be made at www.calvertmemorial.com. New corrections officer joins sheriff's office. Corrections officer Michael Kasky has spent the past 8 weeks at the Macon County Law Enforcement Training Center. He recently graduated as a certified corrections officer in the state of Illinois. Kasky was congratulated and welcomed to the DeWitt County Sheriff's Office. And finally, Clinton Journal letter policy. The Clinton Journal accepts responsibly written letters covering topics of interest of our readers. Letters must be the original works of their senders. The Journal does not publish anonymous letters. Letters submitted for publication must include the name of the author, addresses, and telephone number. Addresses and telephone numbers will not be published. The editor and manager reserve the right to edit letters for length and or content and publish letters using any journal platform, that is, print newspaper, website, or other electronic delivery method. Readers should keep in mind that letters published are the opinions of their authors and not news reports and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of this newspaper, its staff, or its advertisers. The Journal does not certify information used in the letters, but will remove any passages it considers potentially libelous. Election letters. The Journal will accept letters from private citizens endorsing candidates or ballot measures. Candidates must purchase political advertising. One last quick announcement before I go. The Warner Specialty Clinic entrance is completed and open. The barricades and caution tape have officially been removed from the new West Specialty Clinic entrance after inspection from the Illinois Department of Public Health. Patients who have appointments at Warner Hospital Specialty Clinic may now park in the West parking lot and gain entry to the clinic through the new entrance. The new West entrance is for specialty clinic appointments only. All other patients should still use the entrance for their individual departments, that is, the main entrance, ER, and family medicine entrances. Please have a good day, and I will be back next week.